Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Today we have on the show with us Discovery Institute fellow Paul Nelson, who's also an adjunct professor in the Master of Arts program in Science and Religion at Biola University. He's a philosopher of biology who earned his PhD from the University of Chicago. And Dr. Nelson is going to talk to us today about a recent op-ed in the New York Times by University of Washington evolutionary biology professor David Barash. So, Dr. Nelson, thanks for coming on the show with us today.
Thanks for having me, Casey.
Some of our listeners may have seen an article that you posted on Evolution News and Views recently discussing what David Barash calls the talk that he gives to his animal behavior class. So could you maybe just first off tell us a little bit about who is David Barash and what is this talk that he gives to his evolutionary biology class?
David Barash, as you indicated, teaches at the University of Washington, Seattle. And he's well known as an expert in animal behavior, the evolution of animal behavior, but also he deals, of course, with questions that arise just in evolutionary theory in general. Now, the talk is an introductory, I guess you could say, warning to his students that he and the material that he's going to present will challenge their religious views. And let me say, I actually admire his candor. I like honesty. I like straight talk. I like professors, and I've had professors who don't equivocate. They don't hide what they're going to do or bury it in euphemisms. They come right in, put down their laptop and say, here's what I'm going to be teaching you, and here are some challenges you're likely to hear. I had a professor like that, actually, when I was an undergraduate 30 years ago, and I came to have a lot of affection for this guy. I won't name him because our conversations dealing with these issues were private, but he actually ended up recommending me to graduate school, and he was a straight shooter. So let me just say, I admire that aspect of what Barash did in his op-ed, which is to be honest with his students. So that's on the positive side, and actually in my article I didn't sort of allude to that, but I probably should have. Anyway, the talk tells students three things. One is that there's no evidence for intelligent design. There's no evidence for a creator. All the complexity of life, all the amazing details of organisms can be explained by the process of random variation and natural selection. That's point one. Point two is there's nothing special about Homo sapiens. You're an animal like every other animal. Get over it, right? There's nothing that makes us exceptional as a species on this planet. The third point is the most theological one, and that is that there's no solving the problem of natural evil, meaning that there's no way to reconcile the God of sort of classical Western theism, a benevolent, omnipotent designer, with the horrible, kludgy, messed up process of natural selection, which produces all kinds of imperfection and so forth, that the realities of biology, predator-prey relationships, parasitism, disease, you name it, those things cannot be reconciled with the benevolent God of classical theism. So that's the package, and I think what he's doing is telling his students, you've got to handle this, maybe if you can't, or if you can't, maybe this is not the right class for you sort of approach. Now again, let me say I admire the candor there, but here's what I don't admire. And I hope I'm not reading into what Barash wrote or missing something that was there, but there does not seem to be any provision in his op-ed for the students to talk back. And that's not right, because education, going back to the ancient Greeks, is a process of dialogue. It's not simply take it or leave it. A student in that classroom should be able to say, well, Professor Barash, can you point me to the evidence of the power of natural selection, not just as you described it, but really in terms of actual systems, like what's the evidence for the evolution of the vertebrate body plan via natural selection? What's the evidence for the evolution of human moral sense? After all, we're dealing with animal behavior, and if I'm an animal, I've got a sense of right and wrong. Where did that come from? Can you show me how that came to be via random variation and natural selection? So it's not enough for a professor to make a claim, right? He's got to back it up with the data, back it up with the evidence. And I'll tell you, professionally, one of the things that I do is I look for the explanations rendered in terms of random variation and natural selection for things like the vertebrate body plan or the chordate body plan. Chordates appear in the Cambrian explosion without antecedents. That body plan that we share with other vertebrates, other mammals, came from somewhere. If it came via natural selection, and that can be supported by evidence, that explanation should be out there in the biological literature. But I'll tell you something, it's not there. And if your listeners doubt that, they should go and try to find it for themselves. It's just not there. So the claims made on behalf of natural selection as a causally sufficient process, in other words, you don't need to refer to design or any other, frankly, even any other kind of evolutionary mechanism, natural selection will do the work for you, those claims need to be backed up with evidence, and the evidence isn't there. So in my piece for the blog, I said, were I a student in that classroom, that's the kind of objection that I should feel free to raise, to be brought up for discussion. If that's possible in Professor Barash's classroom, then I say, great. That's what education is all about. It's a give and take on the basis of what we know, what the evidence indicates, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit painful to hear challenges to your worldview, but if you can dish it out, you should be able to take it. So what I look for in any kind of educational setting is traffic going in both directions. The professor makes an assertion and the student is allowed to challenge that. That's healthy. That's what I would hope for in that class. So that was the point of my piece for the blog, is to encourage the students to speak up on behalf of an open inquiry, open-ended discussion.
I really appreciate many things you just said. I agree with you about Barash's candor. I think that that is refreshing, actually. And in fact, his op-ed reminds me, and I don't know if you remember this incident a few years back, by a biology lecturer at North Carolina Wesleyan College named Bora, I believe the last name is Zikovic.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, actually, in a post that he posted on his blog, he said, yes, NOMA is wrong, but it is a good first tool for gaining trust. And he goes on to say that this can help students accept evolution. Of course, NOMA is referring to Stephen Jay Gould's non-overlapping magisteria view of science and religion, the claim that science and religion speak to totally different subjects, cannot even in principle contradict or conflict with one another, and therefore people who are religious have absolutely nothing to fear from science because it's impossible for science to contradict religion. And of course, Bora Zikovic here is saying NOMA is wrong, but he wants to promote it anyways because he wants to get the trust of students to then help them to accept evolution. Well, it's hard to respect somebody who is teaching something that they know is wrong, a sort of a false model of the relationship of science and religion, and all along because his intent is to get religious students to accept evolution. I much prefer David Barash's approach that he discusses in his New York Times op-ed, namely to be open about the fact that, yeah, there might be some tensions between evolution and religion. We're going to learn about evolution anyway, and I think that's fine. I think students need to understand evolution. If it poses challenges to faith or not, you know, then fine, let's talk about that. Let's deal with it. But just like you said as well, what I don't appreciate about Barash's op-ed, sort of his dogmatic insistence that there is no room to question a Darwinian view, that students have to go along with what the professor, the big, unassailable PhD at the front of the room, is not allowing students to ask any questions that might actually challenge his viewpoint. So he's going to challenge the religious viewpoints of the students, but he's not going to allow them to actually ask hard questions of his scientific view. Those questions have already been settled. So I guess your advice, I think, that you gave to students is don't tolerate this sort of dogmatic insistence that you are not allowed to question an evolutionary viewpoint. I mean, what exactly would you say to a student in David Barash's evolutionary biology course as far as how they should respond to Barash's dogmatic tone?
Any student in any course where a factual claim is made, it doesn't have to be science, it could be any course, a course on economics, a course on history, a factual claim is made by the professor, the student has, really, I would say, the basic intellectual right to ask for the evidential support. All right, so let's say we're sitting in the classroom. We hear the talk. the reasonable thing to do is to raise one's hand and say, would you provide me with the evidence supporting the claim that you just made about the causal sufficiency of natural selection? Right? It's not enough just to assert that natural selection explains the origin of biological complexity. That has to be backed up with support, with evidential support. So it's not at all unreasonable to say, can you show me? Can you provide the data that, you know, that back up your claim? And my point in my blog post was, for natural selection as a causal process, those explanations that actually show how random variation and natural selection have operated are not available. Now, that's something that people need to know, because otherwise what Barash is saying is simply a falsehood. I hate to put it that bluntly, but it's just not so. As I said, professionally, with respect to something like the question of the origin of animal body plans, which I work on, no animal body plan, the origin of the basic architecture of chordates or the basic architecture of echinoderms or arthropods, has been explained via natural selection. What natural selection actually explains, if you look at what's out there in the biological literature, is relatively minor. And this actually has caused significant disenchantment with textbook theory, which Barash is advocating, the basic sort of neo-Darwinian account of evolution. But let me stress the positive, which is I admire the honesty. I think there's entirely too much question begging and euphemism in the area of the interaction between evolutionary theory, naturalistic evolutionary theory, and various worldviews that are out there, like theism or Christianity or so forth. Much of that euphemism, that sort of cloaking of positions in really what ends up being deceptive language, is there not because of intellectual rigor, but for political reasons. You described an episode which I find regrettable, which is a teacher using a principle, the non-overlapping magisteria principle, to try to disarm students. The professor in that case is not being honest. He's not being straightforward. And I think that's bad. When I taught writing at University of Chicago, I used to assign my students George Orwell's essay, Politics in the English Language, where Orwell says, the great enemy of clarity is insincerity. People say things that they don't really believe because they're worried that if they were honest about their views, that the views would not be palatable. So again, I want to stress, I like the honesty of what Barash says. He's an atheist. He thinks evolutionary theory cannot be reconciled with Christianity or religion in general, theism in general. Fine. That's okay. That's your view. But if you make a claim, if you, Professor Barash, make a claim about the factual or empirical content of the scientific theory, you are obliged to back it up with evidence, and you are obliged to let your students raise questions about what you've said. Otherwise, what's going on has nothing to do with education and everything to do with indoctrination. And there's a world of difference between those two.
Well, Paul, Dr.
No,
Nelson...
No, you can call me Paul. That's my name. Dr. Nelson is my wife, Suzanne, who's a pediatrician.
Well, Paul or Dr. Nelson, depending on what we should call you, I think what you have said is really good advice, both for students and for professors, that it's important to have that give and take in the classroom. Part of responsible pedagogy is to allow students to ask questions. Just as the professor challenged the students have to have the opportunity to challenge the professor, or the intellectual enterprise has really ceased to function properly.
That's right. It goes off the rails.
Exactly. So I think what you're saying is exactly right, and I hope that some professors and students will take your words to heart as they head back to school right now. So thanks for your time and for sharing your thoughts with us here on ID the Future.
You are welcome. Anytime.
I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Don't let any professor tell you that you don't have the right to question Darwinism. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.